Nonetheless, this evidence of popularity and enthusiasm was not feigned. And in part, one could see the effectiveness, the surprise of this moment of exaltation in the way in which certain expectations had not been realized. One of the most important of these expectations had to do with the insistence of socialist movements following Marx's ideas in the years before the outbreak of the First World War that workers who had loyalty to their class and not to their nation, which Marx had dismissed as being a fraud perpetrated by the ruling classes upon workers to make them unaware of their real, actual class interests, that socialist parties had pledged themselves in the years before 1914 that if the capitalists should ever try to take the working class into a war for their capitalistic economic purposes, the socialist movements would simply, in a mass of international solidarity, shut down the war. They would do so by refusing to serve. They would engage in a general strike that would shut down the economies of those countries proposing to go to war. And the result would be not the unleashing of a capitalist war in Europe, but rather, instead, the precipitation of that final workers' revolution. Well, in 1914, contrary to the worst fears of conservative elites, contrary to all those rhetorical, radical promises of the years previous to the war, socialist parties did no such thing. In one European country after another, the socialists voted for war credits, supported war efforts of their respective homelands, rather than refusing to participate as they earlier had vowed to do. It's been said that in that moment of the declaration of war, German workers and French workers had discovered that they might very well have had much in common with one another as workers, but that in 1914 they had discovered that they were first of all Frenchmen, first of all Germans, and they patriotically flocked to their national cause. Radical socialists like Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, in exile in Switzerland, who held much more firmly to the program of international revolution, were disgusted beyond words at what they saw as the collapse, the moral failure of international socialist solidarity. And they would await the correct moment to take action in this context. As young men flocked by the millions to recruiting stations or were called up for arms, many of them had the expectation of a brief war marked by heroism, chivalry, adventure, and they enlisted en masse. Mass armies of crowded soldiers would march into battle, would be hurried towards the frontiers to strike the decisive blow in the First World War. The reality, however, that awaited them, the world of the trenches and trench warfare on the Western Front, would be entirely different from their expectations. The plans which generals had hatched for swift victories, foremost among them the secret Schlieffen plan of German military planners, failed very quickly, and instead of the expectations of quick victory, mobility, glorious cavalry charges, one instead saw a far grimmer scene. Both sides stood their ground and began to dig in. They dug in along trenches, preparing for a long, drawn-out war. The Western Front, two opposing lines of trenches with a no-man's land in between, would run from the Swiss Alps for about 500 miles all the way to the British Channel. And it would create a landscape such as only the most fevered nightmares of former artists could have imagined. Trench warfare remade that landscape into a landscape of mud, barbed wire, and the surreal no man's land that lay between the fortifications of either side. An area littered by corpses, by barbed wire, by shed armaments, and, so the myths that circulated among soldiers stated, by giant rats, such as mankind had never seen before, bred by this conflict. The battlefields were ones in which personal heroism seemed to mean almost nothing.